Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How you doing, Adam?
It's a day of days. This is one of those days where we've recorded multiple podcasts and not just Greatest Gen in one day.
Yeah.
Do you find that the reps help? This being the last of the several reps we're taking today.
Yeah, well, we decided to record just one and not two Greatest Gens today, which I'm very relieved about because I also had a long conference call, so I'm feeling a little talked out. But I'm going to rally for this.
Get that sweaty phone thing that a long conference call gives?
Sweaty earbud, I guess.
Yeah, gross. You don't want to smell those buds, Ben.
No.
Those aren't the buds you want to smell, is what I'm saying.
Those aren't the buds you're looking for. Hey, Adam. No, I don't know nothing, but I know that we have a post office box.
Yeah, we do.
Have you checked that recently?
Indeed, I have. Ben, I even checked it today.
Dang.
Would you like to see what I found?
What in it?
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
We got a poster tube from friend of the podcast, Ann Kilzer.
Oh, the great Ann Kilzer.
Ann Kilzer sends us so much stuff that she does not need to ask what our address is anymore. She just sends. And part of the reason that I said it like that was because what she sent included no note of explanation. The first thing requires no explanation. She sent us the official cruise poster from
Whoa.
Star Trek The Cruise 2. And it is made up like a Star Trek poster. It's got all the people who are on the cruise all together, and it spans all the shows. So this is like a movie poster with Sulu out front, but also Kira and Q and Worf and Riker and Robert Picardo and Geordi. Like, it's pretty great. And it's like a movie poster because it's got the little credits at the bottom.
Yeah.
That includes a credit for the Norwegian Jade, which is the name of the cruise ship. Got to get on that boat sometime, Ben.
I know. We'll do it. Somebody's trying to move a Star Trek The Cruise 2 poster on eBay. So
A
photo of what's on it. It's a nice
looking
poster.
I'm glad
you
get to see it. Yeah, it's real classy. Not that I would sell it. But if I had to sell it, Ben, how much is it going for on eBay?
Let's see. I found it on Google Image, and when I click it, it's just a list of Star Trek swag. So maybe it already sold, and I missed.
Well, keep that eBay window open, Ben, because the tube included some things inside the tube, which was very efficient packing. By Anne, what we have here are two pins. They are they're communicator-esque pins, and they say fully functional on them. One for you and one for me.
Cool.
Which is very cool. But the final one, the final group of items that she sent is what I need the explanation for, Ben. What we have are four half bumper sticker size stickers, okay?
So they're like Keep Tahoe Blue size?
Yeah. And it's a single word on each one of these, black background, white font, okay? And this is like Helvetica. It's like, you'll recognize these when I show them to you.
Oh, like the meme we got in trouble for using on a tour t-shirt.
Oh, that's it exactly. Yeah. That was crazy. Dick, vagina, fuck, and shit are the four stickers. And
wow.
Where did your headcanon go with these bumper stickers? Because I'm thinking, like, when you're on the cruise ship, do you put your sticker on your door and that's what you're into?
Yeah.
Or
this is the poopy room?
Yeah, like, welcome to the dick deck.
Yeah, welcome to stateroom 416, or as we call it, the pach.
Right. Yeah, so I think I might want to follow up with Anne on where exactly these half bumps came from, because I have so many questions.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for sending those, Anne. Anne always sends the best gifts.
Yeah, she's really great. Big fan of the show, as we are big fans of hers. She just moved out there to Japan, and I am hoping that through her great ability to make friends, that can be a future tour stop, because god damn it, Ben, I want to go back to Tokyo so bad. That place is so great. Like, what a crazy time to move there too, like 2 years before the Olympics.
Yeah.
It's going to be bonkers.
Yeah. It's going to be bonksonks.
Let's try to get there before the Olympics, huh?
Yeah. Or during, you know. We could get good at something in between now and then, right?
The greatest Olympics podcast. I mean, I'm just spitballing, Ben.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a thing we could do.
Yeah, the number of times a week Adam texts me an idea for a podcast it's really gone up lately.
that really explains the crickets that I heard in my own head that filled that silent space after I offered that to you.
Yeah.
Saying is I think we could do a tight 15 on the triple jump.
Yeah. I can think of at least 7.5, and you can fill in the rest.
I can do that.
Adam, do you want to get into some Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
I sure do. And you can tell which show we did this morning by your pronunciation of the word Trek. I believe a friend of the podcast, John Roderick, is rubbing off on you. Let's go full circle, Ben, and talk about Season 1, Episode 2 of Deep Space Nine, The Circle.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
It's part 2 of a 3-part arc, is what it is.
It sure is, Adam, and it starts with a showdown in the ready room over this change-em-up that has been affected, where Kira has been taken off of Deep Space Nine duty and Lee Nalis has replaced her.
I was under the impression Major Kira's been nothing but trouble to
you. Who gave you that impression?
It's kind of an interesting sequence here of like actual apology and big city apology and the consequences of those two. Because Lee Nalis is like, you know what? I'm just caught up in this thing and I know you really like Kira, but like I'm going to try to do my best. And Frank Langella's character, Jaro, is like big city apologizing to Sisko, like, yeah, it's politics, bro. Better get used to it. And the consequence of this whole thing is Kira in her quarters. And she's sort of a one-person receiving line to her departure.
Yeah.
As a stream of friends comes in.
She's gotten in the pizza fighting outfit to pack up her bags, and her doorbell it's kind of played for comedy. Her doorbell keeps ringing and more people keep coming in to to bid her adieu.
It's been a pleasure serving with you.
Come in!
Will someone please explain this conversation to me?
A party! For you, I would reduce my catering rate.
Not a party!
It becomes clear that this abrasive character in Major Kira Nerys, for all her abrasiveness, has really won over the staff. And they all love her. And they all, you know, are sad to see her leaving. I mean, and they're expressing this in their different ways. Odo through full-blown rage. and everybody else through normal emotions.
Quark in a let's get drunk and screw kind of way.
Yeah. Dax has like the like excuse of bringing by some hand lotion. And Odo's like, how can you talk about lotion when I'm standing right here? Like, I'm not in the room.
I'm sure a lot of your roommates on move-out day gave you your lotion back, Ben, on your way out of the dorms.
Yeah, well, I just have so much. I have a lot to share, as it were.
A lotion for every occasion or feeling.
Yeah. A lotion for everything and everything in its lotion.
I like this scene.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, if you're trying to front load a conflict with some ambiguity about its conclusion, I'm not sure you portray the crew's feelings this way entirely, because all of them are like, you got to fight this.
Yeah.
You got to fight the man. You got to get your ass back on here. To a person, no one is treating it as the goodbye that maybe if a few of them did, would serve the story a little better, I think.
Yeah, nobody is writing for, oh, you get what you get, you don't get upset.
Right, right.
Or O'Brien going like, hey, can I change places with you? You could become like the head of engineering or something and I could leave.
I mean, one show that did that great was TNG, when they sent Picard and Worf and Beverly to that Cardassian planet, and they installed Captain Jellico, and right. It seemed like they revealed that transfer of power and transfer of personnel really well, where it really felt like, for a time, it might be the end of the show as we knew it.
Because the other thing is, like, you have to wonder, like, does first-run audience of this think that Lee Nallis is really being set up to be the main cast character from now on? And I don't feel like that reads, you know? Like, I don't think that anybody's, like, watching this episode going, like, wow, it's going to be weird, like, not having the Nah Visitor on the show anymore, you know?
If you're someone who watched TNG and recalled Tasha Yar dying in the first season, I think you might be girded a little bit for the idea that a main cast character might leave so soon.
Yeah, I guess so. This scene ends with Vedic Barayal showing up and offering Kira an all-expenses-paid spa package at the Bajoran monastery that he lives at. And this is something that she accepts. She needs a vacation.
Check out the big balls on Vedic Barayal, like basically asking her out in front of all of her friends.
Yeah. That dude is so at peace with himself and the world. He can just walk in and ask for what he wants.
Yeah. It not me.
I think like right around this time, we've got Jake calling his dad down to the crew deck. And somebody has painted Yankee Go Home on the door to Sisko's apartment.
We only see this uniform once, but Jake makes the call to his dad, and then his dad comes down to their porch, and Jake is wearing what looked to me like a pastel Superman onesie. Like, it's got these weird cutouts in it that looks like there could be like an S shield on the front. What is he wearing?
What is he wearing? The Jake Sisko story.
Yeah. Yeah, give us the three-story arc about how he chooses his clothes.
Yeah, do you think Jake is ever like going to the dance and Sisko's like, Jake, you can't wear that.
It's too much nuck.
Too much nuck. I'm not letting any son of mine go out and just revealing nuck garmentry. You know what he kind of looks like is, what's that guy in The Avengers with the...
You're talking about the Iron Man?
with the treasure troll charm in his forehead.
In his forehead?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we're bad nerds for not knowing this, but I'm not a real comic book movie person.
Imdb. What is that fucker's name? I feel like it's Paul Bettany. Jarvis/Vision?
Jesus, deep cut, Ben.
I don't know. He's like one of these guys that's just like in the Avengers, whatever the most recent Avengers movie was. And I saw him again in the trailer for the new one. And I was like, I have no idea what that character is.
Did you see Black Panther yet?
I did see Black Panther.
I also saw Black Panther. And we could go on and on about what we thought of that movie. I really liked it.
I did too.
But fucking Marvel movies do that thing where they give you three sequences in the credits. And
oh, you know, I didn't stay for the credits.
Well, I don't think you missed anything, Ben, because I did, and I didn't understand what they were getting at. And the fucking kids in the row behind us were like, oh, that's so-and-so from the Captain America movies, which was a branch of this Marvel tree that I have not watched. I haven't seen any Captain America movies. I haven't seen any Thor movies. Shit. And I guess he was associated to both of those.
I saw that movie with our pod daddy, Jesse Thorne, and when the credits started rolling, we just like got up and we're like, that was fun, and left the theater.
Evidently, that's such a trope for Marvel movies that people got up at the end of Black Panther and people were like shouting them down and back
it's
into
not
their
over
seats. yeah
I took a ride in a popular gig economy ride sharing app
the next
day, and my driver happened to be a black man, and he had seen the movie the night before as well, and shared with me how meaningful it was to him to like see a movie with a mostly black cast being heroes. Like he felt like, you know, he's lived his whole life waiting to have a hero that he really identified with, and that it was like a really transcendental experience for him, and that he like woke up the next morning feeling like there was almost a weight off his shoulder because he could see himself in a hero. And I thought that was really remarkable. I hope it's as meaningful to a lot of people as it was to him.
Let me ask you a question, Ben. Did you bring it up or did he?
It was the first, I got in the car and he said, you see Black Panther?
That's good, because the thing I had playing in my head was you getting in the car, looking at the driver and going, Black Panther, huh? Pretty great movie. Like totally.
I'm cool. I saw it as well.
Like totally like the dad from Get Out.
Right.
I would have voted for him a third time.
Right.
Did you go to the Americana to see the film? And I think I'm asking for our listening audience. Did you run into a certain Frenchman while watching it?
No, I suggested we go to the Americana to Jesse, and he did not cotton to the idea particularly.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, well, Jesse, the advantages of the Americana are, one, there's no way we can deceive ourselves that we're not living in Southern California by going to the Americana, and two, they have Din Tai Fung there.
And God, there's like a J. Crew right there. Like, yeah. What could be more convenient for Jesse Thorne?
I don't think Jesse wears a lot of J. Crew, to be honest.
No, I know that. I absolutely know that. That would disgust him, the idea.
Yeah. He's like Brooks Brothers or Up.
Yeah, he is not an off-the-rack gentleman.
No. He's an off-the-thrift store rack, but I don't get the sense that Jesse is doing a lot of, like, new clothes shopping.
Yeah.
For the most part. I feel like he mostly thrifts.
Just like our other friend, John Roderick.
Our only other friend. Golden Carton. The cut.
Golden Carton. So this graffito is the big yellow circle that that we've grown familiar with over the last two episodes. Again, it's more threatening that it happened to his front door than the symbol itself.
Yeah, this is like a first draft of a symbol. Like, it's really nothing too memorable about it.
I think, I'm just going to say it, I think it's a dumb-looking symbol.
Yeah, it's a dumb-looking symbol. You're not wrong.
Yeah. Not a fan.
So we get a scene where Kira like takes one last walk around Ops, and it is not the earned farewell that Picard had that that time he had to say goodbye to the bridge.
I was thinking that myself, like as we talk about how her friends told her that she'd be missed and that she should fight, and also the single
and her having to realize through that they are her friends. Like she hadn't even admitted that to herself.
You needed four seasons of TNG to earn that, and part of the reason this felt so flat to me was that like after a single season, I was not ready to engage this on the emotional level that it wished we did. They give us the single brass instrument of sadness, but even that then couldn't conjure the tears.
Well, also, like, I think that this has been a place primarily of conflict for Kira. Like, she hasn't she has never liked the fact that she's stationed here. You know, she hasn't ever been like, this is the job for me. I fucking love you guys. And while Picard never voiced anything like that, he definitely...
Not until the finale of the entire series did he voice that.
But he lived the truth of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, the bridge did feel like Picard's home in a way that the ops section does not really feel like Kira's native turf.
Odo mentions to her in the condo that, you know, you're a hotshot detective that doesn't follow the rules. and that's your brand, baby. And the more other people describe her, I'm not sure.
You're a renegade, but you get results.
They talk.
And you're
about
coming back for one last job before you get out of the game for good.
This is another way that they don't earn the moment, is because it's talked about. Odo's like, you remember all those missions we went on, like cracking some Cardi skull and kicking ass? Like, those were the days. Like looking wistfully out the window. Like, to hear this stuff and not see it prevents us from fully engaging the gravity of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they could have cut like a little montage of past, you know, little like roll in the clip show device, put it on our head, show like five or six examples of
get
of
some
Kira.
Vitamin C graduation song up in there. Everybody's free to wear sunscreen.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road.
Friend of the show Dave was telling me about the last Friendly Fire that we did that came out, where you did the impression of the guy at the end of 60 Minutes.
Oh yeah.
who we couldn't think of the name of at the time.
Yeah.
And I still can't think of the name of. And what I told him was, like, I am so envious of your ability to just launch into an impression that you aren't sure you can pull off.
You're thinking Andy Rooney.
I'm thinking Andy Rooney. That impression of Andy Rooney, like, I'm hoping you answer me honestly here. Have you ever done an impression of him before you did it on that show?
No, and I recall...
That's comedic bravery, man.
As I recall, I got about half of the way into a sentence and then realized I didn't really know what Andy Rooney would say about anything.
Oh, man. This is too much pod on pod. Anyway, Kira gets on the lift and it goes down. It goes down to Bajor.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, so we have this passing of the baton. So Lean Alice is now in the Kira Nerys job, and Kira is trying to find some serenity. Like, we find her very angrily attempting to rearrange stepping stones in a stream on Bajor. And I mean, I'm not a particularly spiritual person, but even I can tell that that's not how you find inner peace.
I had a real problem with Redick Barile's seduction technique here, Ben. A little on the nose when he steps into frame and says, perhaps you'd rather try your hand at woodcrafts, and then like puts his hands on his waist, like as if to present his uncut Bajoran cock.
It's crooked.
And yet it seems to go over her head. Like she's so upset that
She doesn't watch porn for the dialogue because that's yeah. straight out of that.
She skips that part.
But did you get this vibe the entire time? Like he is, it's all seduction. It's not about Kira at all. And I don't know why she feels so inclined to believe that it is. You know?
You mean the...
I feel like her character's truth is that she's down there to get spiritual, and right. Vedic Barayal's deal is to seduce her, but I feel like Kira is smarter than that.
Yeah, she knows she's been sidelined, and that's super frustrating for her. That's the ultimate lady boner killer for her.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like, I'm not in the mood for sex. I'm pissed off about the fact that I had a pretty cool career going, and now, like, forces that are entirely above my pay grade have conspired to take me off the field of play.
She's had a crazy couple of days, huh? She goes behind enemy lines, gets Lee Nallis, pretends she's a hooker.
Now this priest is trying to bang.
Yeah, now she's banging priests. Pretty wild.
She even has an orb experience, which I think is her first. And it's interesting. It's interestingly incoherent and not, it's, you know, you can't quite take as much meaning from it as the prophet orb experiences that Sisko has had. Or at least when Sisko has had them, he comes out like fairly sure of what he should be doing. Also, he usually doesn't make, like, usually the prophet orbs don't make Sisko be nude for half the time.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that they made Kira do that that happens all the time is she turned a camera and went, ow!
Yeah, she has a very steamy religious experience here.
I think DS9 handles dream sequences so much better than TNG.
I feel like 90% of the time that was Data's dreams, though, so who even knows, man?
It is a cellular peptide cake. With mint frosting.
Those felt very clunky and on the nose. And there's a fair amount of ambiguity to what she's seeing. Like, it feels more dreamlike than what we've gotten before on the other Star Trek shows. So I think they did a good job here. But you're right, it's a mishmash of Dax and Vedic Wynn and Vedic Barayal. And she's in the middle of all these people who appear to want something from her. And then Barayal shows up nude and wants something else from her, and then Kira's nude also, and they sort of, he takes her into his arms in a kind of cover of a romance novel pose.
Yeah, it's and like she like lifts her head up, and you can see that there's sweat dripping down her throat. It's really intense. Like, I wonder if they, like, misted them down, because he's pretty sweaty, too.
I don't know what it is about the fidelity of my copy of the episode, but I didn't grok the sweat.
There's sweat, baby. Trust me, there's sweat.
Have you ever had to sweat an actor down?
No. Times in my career that I've, like, actually gotten to direct actors is not that many.
Yeah. Yeah, me neither. It's always about breaking out the powder. Got to get that shine off.
Yeah, right. You don't want people to look sweaty for the most part.
Unless they're nude in a dream sequence.
Right.
I'm not shooting too many of those, Ben.
What are you doing?
So Quark bursts into Odo's office and is like, man, we got to cut and run.
It's over. What are you talking about? Everything. Bajor, the provisional government, the Federation being here, all of it. We got to leave.
Like, the planet down there is about to consume itself.
Yeah, I love the idea that Quark is looking around and is like, this is about to go sideways. I got to go tell my buddy Odo that it's time to get out of here.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a continuation of a thread that began in the first episode of this three-parter, which is like Quark is really trying to get on Odo's good side and really trying to engender some good feelings between them. I guess this is something that a friend does to help out another friend. I mean, if he truly cares about him, he wants Odo to leave too.
Yeah, and no good deed goes unpunished, does it, Adam?
No, because that earns him a field promotion. He's pinned a star to one of Quark's giant ears.
Deputy Quark.
I mean, he wears so many vests already that I feel like he's ready to be a sheriff's deputy.
Yeah, I like that it's smash cuts and it's the that Bad Boys song, and then it's just a bunch of shots of Quark taking down nude men that are running away from him.
See, when you said the Bad Boys song, I had the Wild Wild West song stuck in my head. Because here's where my thought process went. You said Bad Boys, I thought of Will Smith from the film series Bad Boys, and right. Then I thought of Wild Wild West.
Wow.
Also of the Will Smith.
That is complicated film, and wrong.
Film oeuvre. Like, I skipped over the song you referred to completely.
I believe in improv they call that going A to C.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Odo has been communicating with security dudes down on Bajor and has formulated a theory that the arms that the Circle are using to inflict violence on the surface are coming from dubious places. And in fact, like, every time Bajor is described in this episode, it's described as being like extremely chaotic and violent right now, and like a not safe place to be at all. Like the station feels at a remove, but when they talk about the capital city, it's like beatings and shootings and like guns everywhere, and it's super crazy and chaotic, and like members of the government are getting their asses kicked by the Circle. And yet,
you know,
when
dubious arms was my high school yearbook superlative.
Yeah. Yeah, you were in that picture of the weightlifting club, but just like way off in the one corner and not really with the rest of the group.
That is a great name for a workout club, right? Dubious arms.
Yeah, it's funny though, because like when we go to the surface, it's always in the super bucolic and peaceful grounds of the monastery. So,
yeah, there's a monasticism to that scene, and then there's also the ultra corporate look to where the government lives. I hate being told that a planet is in chaos and not seeing any of it.
Right, it's way too much tell, not enough show.
Right,
Kira and Brielle are like walking around in this. In this parkland, I guess we should say Odo and Quark formulate a plan to get to the bottom of where the guns are coming from. And we cut back to the monastery grounds and Brielle and Kira walking around when they are surprised by none other than Vedic Wynn.
What a pleasure to come upon such a flowing exchange of spiritual harmony.
Vedic Wynn is doing that thing that she always does, which is like that hostile niceness.
Yeah.
She says something that really made me laugh here, Ben, which is something that you and I have discussed quite a bit. She's like, you know, you can stay as long as you want. Days even. Maybe even a week, if necessary.
She's really setting limits while maintaining the veil of niceness.
And that's our three-day rule, Ben.
Right.
We've talked about it a bunch. That's what the three-day rule is for.
Yep. Somebody's going to stay at your house, set a hard limit at 3 days. You don't have to tell them why.
Yeah.
You could tell them that you have a thing and be as specific as that.
I am telling everyone in the sound of my voice, you can limit a lot of conflicts in your life if you prescribe to this 3-day rule.
It's a great rule. I'm glad you told me about it. I highly recommend it. Ever since I started living that 3-day rule lifestyle that you put me onto, Adam, my life has been way better.
Ben, how would you like to work with your friends and family?
Earn money from home without lifting a finger.
Yeah.
One thing that came out in this scene, she's a little salty that Baryl helped himself to the orb and just let Kira look at it. And they refer to it as the third orb. And I remember in the pilot episode, Sisko is given an orb and said, there are 8 orbs. The 7 others are in Cardassian custody. You got to get them back. And that seems to have stopped being the story at some point. Did I miss something?
You sound like someone who wants to read and respond to a lot of email.
I don't. I really don't.
I'm going to take the side of the person writing those letters and say, I'm not sure that's the case. I don't think so, Ben.
Yeah.
But I have no idea.
Well, honestly, actually.
I feel like Vedic Baryl is just as annoyed at Wynn as anyone else. Like,
he hates her.
It's not like Wynn has her fans among the Bajorans. I think she's universally, like, school children and parents of school children notwithstanding. Like, I feel like people look at her kind of askance, and they don't really like her attitude.
Yeah, I kind of wonder why nobody ever calls her on her one thing.
Right.
It's just like, Vedic Wynn, you always couch things in such nice language, but there always seems to be barbs. You know, just name the game and see what she says.
Yeah, no one ever tells her how much she sucks, right? I feel like people were more direct with Loxana Troi than they are with Vedic Wynn.
Yeah, at least people rolled their eyes in front of Loxana.
Right.
So I think it's around this time that Sisko heads down to the planet and meets General Krim, who is the Bajoran militia leader who is trying to hold civil society together with his two bare hands, basically. And it's kind of an interesting interchange because Sisko offers the general, like, hey, listen, like, we've got some pretty interesting intelligence that these guns might be coming from Cardassia. Do we know that yet?
Quark described the Chrysari's arms as dubiously obtained.
Right.
And I think the subtext to any sort of armament in this context is probably Cardassian adjacent, if not directly Cardassian. So when Odo ratifies himself and stows away on the ship, that's that's what he finds.
Right. Yeah. Any treaty has to be ratified, and so too any arms deal.
He could be anything. And yet he's frequently the rat.
Yeah. Maybe that's just his kink, man. A rat with googly eyes on it. The other thing is that Sisko is asking the general for a favor, like, hey, my girl Major Kira got moved down here, and, you know, we really like her up on the station, and if she could get reinstated or stationed there in some other capacity, that would be cool, but just any, like, cool job for her at this point would be appreciated, because I like her a lot, and I think it sucks that she got taken out of the game. And the general really respects that Sisko didn't try and use the Chrysari information as leverage for the Kira play. And it's like, it's one of those, I feel like this is great writing, because it's like, it maybe wouldn't even occur to a Starfleet to use information as currency, because they're so unused to using currency.
Yeah, but I mean, I might take the other side of this argument in saying that what this foreshadows is when that favor is returned. And that moment can feel far more satisfying if it is not foreshadowed and instead referred to in that moment down the road.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I liked the moment, and I liked that it kind of ends with respect Knuckles against these two characters who you can feel the tension building between.
Right. Yeah.
It's a cool way for a, like, it's a very Starfleet way of addressing somebody who has the potential to make a lot of trouble for you. It's just like, hey, like, full respect, eye to eye. Here's kind of what I hope will happen.
Yeah, and, you know, for all the professional courtesy they show to each other, I think it's useful to remember that Sisko doesn't have a lot of power here.
Right.
Like, he's going down there to see what's up. He's also there to ask a favor. He doesn't have a lot to give. And this leads into scenes that happen toward the end of the episode. Just what are his choices? I think he's seeing those being reduced at a pretty rapid pace.
Yep. It's like getting toward the end of a game of solitaire and realizing you are not going to finish your game of solitaire.
Right.
He goes and, tells Kira that he's still riding for her and he likes her monastery vestments. And then the second he leaves, she gets grabbed by faceless Jawas and abducted off to the Star Trek caves.
The Jabberwockies are back, but a lot of people argue that they've never left, Ben.
Right.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my living state.
Oh,
I don't use the bucket anymore.
And this Star Trek cave scene, it has revealed that Minister Jarrow, who, for some reason, like, anytime somebody said the name Jarrow, I thought they were saying General, and whenever they said General, I thought they were saying Jarrow.
Hmm.
I don't know what that was, but I kept getting confused about who people were talking about. But Jarrow is the force behind the circle. In fact, he is the circle.
I am the law.
When you cast Frank Langella, I think, like, he's never going to play the role of the good guy, you know? Like, I can't remember a role of his where he has. He's always either Dracula or a peripheral bad guy.
Right.
And so reveal also was not entirely surprising, but what's great about it is his performance. Like, yeah. Langella's the shit out of this. And when he takes the high ground in those caves and reveals himself out of the shadows, like, that's deeply satisfying in a way that when you're him, that's what you get to do.
One time Frank Langella played a good guy was in Robot and Frank. Have you ever seen that movie?
No, that was at SIFF a couple of years ago, and that was one of the ones I wanted to see but just didn't.
It's fucking great. It's about an older man who is, you know, presumably kind of declining mentally, who's, instead of his family coming and reconnecting with him, they just get him a humanoid house robot who he like ropes into some fun hijinks and schemes, and it's written by Chris Ford, who listens to our show and is a friend of The Greatest Generation.
What?
Yeah. Highly recommend the movie Robot and Frank to anybody who enjoys thoughtful and funny sci-fi.
Wow. I'm going, not just because he's a friend of the show, but I will go out and see that immediately. When you started describing the story, I thought you were going to get into some real Lars and the Real Girl vibes there.
Yeah, they bang all over the house.
Elderly widower Frank Langella is lonely. I'm so lonely. I have no one to spend time with. That's when his friends chipped in and got him a real girl.
Skip 15 if you're worried about spoilers, but it turns into a heist movie. It's really fun.
Cool.
Any of you fucking pricks move, and I'll execute every motherfucking last one of you.
So Frank Langella is hanging out in the caves with the Jabberwockies, and they say to Kira a thing that dovetailed a lot with a guy in India who was denying me an extra seat on an airplane that I was trying to buy, when he said, the British left a lot of things, specifically their bureaucracy. And I was like, you say that like it's a good thing.
No one despises the Cardassians more than I, Major. But we did learn a few things from them. Like how to encourage people to talk.
So we're going to now torture you.
And this is something that O'Brien has stated his thoughts about many times over.
Yeah, they wheel her into a room where there are four lights. I mean, we never see them, but we can assume, right?
Yeah, she's got to eat. What's the egg that you eat with a hood on your head?
Oh, okay.
Balloon. They wheel her into that room with the lights. She's got to eat the balloon.
Yeah,
there's a bunch of like more mental torture happening.
Right. But, yeah. And that implant with the universal remote.
Right. I love Nana Visitor. I don't think there's any question about that, but were you surprised at how she played this scene? Like, Jero basically says, I'm going to torture you now. And she basically, like, she does nothing. I was expecting her to go apeshit in there.
Yeah,
like,
start kicking.
Throwing some shit and, like, get into a Star Trek fight with people trying to escape before she's subdued.
Yeah.
But that it sort of fades to commercial was very dissatisfying for me, especially when we've spent so much of the episode talking about, you know, what a badass Kira is. All her friends describe her as such. I mean, maybe her blissed outness in the gardens with Vedic Barayal sort of...
it softened sort of her up too much.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean... You can mentally edit in a cool Star Trek fight in that scene.
That's right. I can do that. I will.
Yeah, baby.
Much better.
Up in the station, they're like just finding out that Kira's missing, and they're talking over, you know, like, oh, you know, how do we figure out where she is? And Quark barges into Ops and is like, hey, guys, I've got some news, too. And they're like, knock it off, Quark. Get out of here. And Quark says,
fuck you, Quark.
No, listen. I'm Deputy Quark now, and I've got news from Odo. He went and ratified himself and observed an arms trade, and we know where those weapons are going, man.
Yeah, and so now for the first time, everyone's on the same page about where these weapons have come from.
Yeah, it's the Cardassians are sort of doing a backdoor destabilization of the relationship between the Federation and Bajor. It's a Putin-level dirty trick where if Bajor stops trusting the Federation will have to go, and then Bajor will be weak again, and the Cardassians can come back, get their space station, and get a bonus space butthole that they didn't even know about last time they had that space station.
It's a chilling comparison to a contemporary problem, Ben.
It really is.
Kind of wild.
So they mount a pretty cool Star Trek rescue mission. A lot of fun phaser fire, a lot of different guys getting beamed with energy weapons in the Star Trek caves. Lee Nalis
does more off-camera action, too, because you know Kira's been tortured because you see her fucked up face.
Right.
And you hear her screams, but you don't see it happen.
Right.
And again, like, I want to feel something for her that's
you
bigger than what they...
You want to know how many lights she thinks
there are. Right, right. Like, I love her, but they got to beat her up, I think, for it to get super dark in the way that I think it needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's, like, 5 minutes of show in between her getting abducted and getting rescued.
Right.
No kidding. It's like,
yeah,
that little amount of time. Like, it's we get the entire Frank Langella monologue about him being an evil bad guy, the entire, you know, debate about, you know, where she might be and what happened, the reveal that the Cardassians are behind the whole thing to the gang, and the rescue, and like, she's back in Six Bay in 5 minutes.
You know, if we're talking about story efficiency, I mean, this
is
a
like
show.
Disco level story density.
They've already committed to a 3-episode arc. What the fuck is the difference between going for a 4th episode? Like,
yeah,
let it breathe a little bit.
Maybe Langella's paycheck.
Oh yeah.
I bet these episodes cost a little bit more than your average.
Absolutely. Yeah, strike that from the record. gotta stack those Langella bucks.
Morn.
Dear sweet. Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
And so then we get a full-on conspiracy scene between Wynn and Jero, where they are talking about their plans, and like he's going to be the leader of the Bajoran government, and she's going to be the leader of the Bajoran religion, and they're going to like help each other get into power by whatever means necessary. And if she gets to be the Kai, then he gets to be, you know, like they're linking their fates and really like twirling their mustaches the entire time.
Are Jero and Wynn fucking?
It is kind of implied that their relationship is more than just professional.
I most definitely felt that way. Part of it is how they frame them, because they walk around each other the same way as Vedic, Brile, and Kira do.
Well, and it's also like sunset, and they're always, it's like very telenovela, the way they're always like both looking in the same direction, but one is, you know, way in the foreground and the other is in the background.
There's so much
blocking in this fucking episode. Everybody is always like walking from one part of a set to another and then turning and saying a thing. Like that scene in Kira's quarters at the beginning was like the rehearsal of that must have gone 25 times before they had all the blocking down.
It felt very stage play.
Yeah.
As scenes go for this show. One way I really like that final scene also was like you rarely get two movie actors in a scene together with no one else on Star Trek, and to see Louise Fletcher and Frank Langella chop it up for a good 3 minutes together was great. Yeah, very satisfying. Like they elevate each other in a way that is just really nice to see. I'm not diminishing the contributions that the many good actors make on this show, but like there's a difference. There's a difference between decades of film experience that these guys have, and it's fun to watch.
It is really cool. They're like really bringing a lot of prestige to the proceedings.
Yeah.
So the button on the episode is Sisko taking a FaceTime from Admiral Chakotay, who, for those keeping track at home, is just a white guy and does not appear to have anything to do with the character Chakotay from Star Trek Voyager. This guy is saying, like, Prime Directive trumps them knowing that there's a criminal conspiracy afoot to overthrow the provisional government on Bajor, and ordering the withdrawal of all Starfleet people from Deep Space Nine, which... which is not what Sisko wanted to hear, you know? And one thing we know about Sisko is that he's kind of a master of stalling.
Right.
Like, that's kind of his go-to move is like, you know, hold him up in space dock or, you know, he's always stalling.
I intend to take all Starfleet instruments, materiel, in fact, all Federation property of any kind. How quickly can we do that?
Well, sir, that'll take days. A week for all I know.
Well, I mean, what someone could call stalling, another person could describe as thoughtful. Like, I was pretty blown away at how quickly Chakotay made the decision to evacuate the station. Like,
yeah, Chakotay's
well, given
a
the
real,
factors, go ahead and bail.
Real surrender monkey.
Yeah, and God, I would have... You would hope that that the administration of the Federation would take a little time to think about this, but that's what Sisko does. And that's what he forwards as a plan when he asks O'Brien how long it would take to evacuate, and then he's like, "Well,
what if we like literally took everything, like down to the last pencil that we brought with us?"
You know how you move out of an apartment that you've rented, and some of those apartments you're contracted to clean really well before you leave, and then the other one you're just able to leave without cleaning. Give me the
you move out of an apartment and you don't clean.
Doesn't really matter.
Every time.
You lose your security deposit, Rambo.
It's like 8 days. O'Brien's like, well, yeah, to get every pad off of the station, to get every runabout out of here, it's going to take that long. And so that's the plan. He's like, Sisko's like, it looks like not all of us are going to be gone in time. And he squints. He squints to be continued.
Yeah. Riker squint to be continued.
Yeah.
A+. Did you like the episode, Adam?
I think it's hard to like the middle of a trilogy.
Most what about, of the time. What about Empire?
Yeah, I mean, Empire's great.
Fucking A.
All right, Empire's great. Jeez. For the reasons that I stated before, like, it felt a little flat throughout. You got Lee Nallis as a part of the story that doesn't really offer anything. You have...
Right, he's so pivotal in the last episode, and this episode he is kind of a doormat.
Right. You have Kira, which should be a very high bullet point in her character story, which is she's tortured by Jero shortly after looking into a prophet orb and seeing a depiction of her future. Like, this should be a pivotal moment in her life, and even that feels flat to me, given how little we see of her as a result, and how much she's talked at instead of having her own agency about things.
Yeah.
And those are the episodes that I really like the best, is when characters act like themselves and display the agency that they've earned. And so, I mean, it's not like it's a bad episode, but like the character work isn't as strong as I like from episodes that I like.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, like, it never feels in this episode like we are being dug into a deeper hole. If they'd gotten it where the station is being evacuated and Kira is still missing and abducted and presumably getting tortured, you know, I want to feel super deep in the hole at the end of this, and I feel like they got maybe one too many wins before the end.
That
for it to feel like that?
That's a great rewrite, Ben. Absolutely. Yeah, like raise the stakes all the way.
Ratchet that shit up.
I don't want any wins at this point.
Not even Vedic wins.
Ben, do we have any Priority One messages?
Hell yeah.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first Priority One message is of a commercial nature, and it goes like this. Kapla, Star Trek fans. Pour yourself a hot Rectigino and check out Advanced Sagebrush and Shootouts at asspodcast.com. It is a comedy role-playing podcast set in an 80s/90s action TV world. Advanced Sagebrush and Shootouts. It's like the Adventure Zone, except not for nerds. It's for cool Star Trek fans like you. And then parenthetically, it says, please say ASS instead of ass. Their call to action here is search for Advanced Sagebrush and Shootouts in iTunes and subscribe, or go to asspodcast.com.
I'm so glad they were specific about the ass. That's great marketing by them.
Anybody that listens to our show knows that we're specific about the ass. Man, this sounds fun.
They have a cool art style
on their webpage too.
That's a well-written blurb there, because they know their audience by comparing anything to the Adventure Zone.
Yeah.
That's how we should do our show. It's like the Adventure Zone, except not a role-playing game, and it's about Star Trek.
And we're like, you know, a third as funny, probably.
Ben, we have a second Priority One message. It is of a personal nature. It is from James Anderson, The Proposed. It is for Sarah Giffen, the one who proposed.
I remember this. This is a callback, Adam.
This is an and now the conclusion Priority One message.
Yeah.
Message goes like this. Yes, I'll marry you. I may be a robot, but I'm fully functional. And when we assemble our own Lal, we'll name her Isla. I wonder what Ben's rate is in scarves to officiate. Also, I'm sorry I let it slip that dad is dead before we finished season 6 together 5 years ago.
Whoa. Oh.
Nice work, James.
You just spoiled it for Adam.
Wow. Sorry to any viewers who didn't already know that too, James says in parentheses. Shout out to Griffin.
Man.
James, if that part gets bleeped, and I actually truly believe it should be, know that I read it, and know that I'm very disappointed in you. not for the whole wedding proposal, which was great. And
yeah, and congratulations, Sarah, for having your proposal given a yes to. That's I know that it's been like at least a few weeks since Sarah proposed, so pretty exciting that she finally has her answer.
You have my deepest feelings of joy for you both. However, James, the priority one message is not for spoilers. And I expect Ben to tell you that in person when he officiates your wedding.
I was going to say that Adam and I are a package deal for wedding officiation, but I think Adam is so mad now.
You know what the package is that you're the officiant and I'm the flower boy.
Adam, I have to apologize. I exchanged some emails with our friend Daniel at Max Fun about the spoiler in there, and I said, I don't think we care about spoilers for anything that's only available in standard definition. Because he was offering to write in and have them edit that for spoilers. But I didn't realize you didn't know.
Maybe you stick it unedited after the end song to the show. Like, we play the edited version in the P1, and then if you want to hear what the unedited spoiler is at the end, maybe you can stick around for that.
If you haven't watched Deep Space Nine before and you want to, you know, watch it fresh and then hear our take on it, and not have us ruin any of the surprises, you know, don't stick around for after the credits. But if you already know what's coming, do! And congrats, you two, on your impending nuptials. If you'd like to send a Priority One message, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. It's a great way to support the ongoing production of The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine.
Thanks. Gotta get that gold press lap. Get that gold press lap.
Am I right? Yeah. Am I right?
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I'm giving my Shimoda to Beryl. It's not funny to make fun of, like, such transparently creepy seduction method techniques. But I found them personally funny. Like,
yeah.
Much in the way that Picard shows girls the window as his seduction technique, so too I really get the feeling that this is out of a playbook for Beryl, and he always shows girls the box. Like,
yeah.
Like, hey, you want to come? Hey, you know what? You need to... he like rubs her shoulders. He's like, wow, you're so tense. Why don't you come stack rocks in my garden and maybe I'll show you the box. Like, as a form of seduction. I don't like him. And what's more is I feel like we are supposed to like him in the context of the show.
Right.
And I'm resisting that actively because of his sort of scummy techniques here. So I know this isn't a great place to like call attention to that, because a Shimoda's supposed to be sort of a joyful example of something better than that. But like, I feel like it's also a good placeholder for something that's really an outlier in the rest of the show. And I'm going to use my Shimoda for that. What a weirdo.
Weirdo. My drunk Shimoda is one of the guys in the circle that is defending the cave when Sisko mounts his rescue operation. Mm-hmm. One of the Bajorans is... guns out. Like, he ripped off the sleeves of the uniform that everybody else is wearing that's the same, so that he could have those arms going for the shootout scene. And I just love the idea of him, like, you know, he's living in a cave and going out and doing like terrorist actions, but he's like looking at his the circle uniform and he's like, you know what this would look, you know what would make this look awesome? Fucking some arms, dude. And just rips them off.
He's not missing back and bicep day.
No. This dude is a lot of fun.
Shout out to all my Jim Shimoda rats out there.
Yeah. Love those Jim Shimodas. This guy is definitely one of them.
What do we have coming up on the third episode of this three-episode arc, Ben?
Well, Adam, I believe we have committed to now reading both the Netflix and the Amazon episode descriptors. Let me...
That's a commitment that you made. I would encourage you to read the one that you find best.
Okay. Well, the the third part of this three-part arc is Season 2, Episode 3, The Siege, Part 3. While Sisko leads a daring last stand against the Bajoran takeover forces, Kira and Dax embark on a desperate mission to reveal the truth about the coup.
All right. There's a desperation aplenty over these three episodes, only I don't really feel it.
Well, you know, sometimes it's nice to not feel the desperation that everybody else is feeling, you know? If anybody was wanting to know how Netflix describes that episode, it goes like this. With less than 5 hours remaining before Bajoran forces are due to arrive, Sisko continues to evacuate Deep Space Nine.
There it is. If I'm going to vote on all of these, I'm voting for that one.
That's
great capsule.
Real dumb. Real dumb. So that's next week. I believe we have a gach.biz/game to play at this point.
Sure do.
Do you want to roll the dice this time, Adam?
Oh, I thought you'd never ask. I'm always blowing on yours.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
All right, I've put the die into one of those Yahtzee cups. Giving it a good shake. And there we go.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
And my number is 1.
Okay. Well, that puts us on square 8, which is nothing. So, I mean, it's not nothing. It's an episode, man.
Sure. We still have to do the show.
Yeah.
There is no square on here that says skip the episode. That's not a thing.
Yeah, no vetoes anymore.
We want to thank everyone who supports the show by going to MaximumFun.org/donate, as well as those who buy Priority One messages or any of our merch items on
Max Fun Drive is coming up if you are listening to the show, you know, in real time as it is released. So get ready to make your support known worldwide. We've got some really exciting stuff planned for that.
Yeah, if you thought Crimson Tide episode was exciting,
just
hold
you
on to your ass.
Better hold on to your butts. Maybe we should do a Jurassic Park episode. That would be fun.
Okay.
Kind of random, but we should thank...
That's one great big pile of podcast.
Yeah. Did we thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for more of our theme music than we would ever have imagined?
We didn't, but we should.
We should. Thanks, guys.
Engaging us on social media is something that you can do. You can also engage each other. You can you can straight up propose to each other if you want.
I mean, yeah.
That's a thing that happens.
More fun to do that in person or via P1, but if you just want to hashtag it Greatest Gen and propose to somebody...
Sure.
Go sick.
Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit. We've got great fan communities everywhere. And with that, we'll be back at you next time with the third of a 3-part episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which is hopefully not nude and sweaty.
Yeah, that's a The Naked Now episode thing, regular episode thing.
Thankfully, way down the road.
Spoiler alert.
I wonder what Ben's rate is in scarves to officiate. Also, I'm sorry I let it slip that Jadzia dies before we finish season 6 together 5 years ago.
Whoa. Oh.
Nice work, James.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.